I'm going to be speaking to you from behind the pulpit today, which is not my favorite place to be, but I have done something to my back, and I think I'll feel a little more stable with the pulpit to hold me up, and I have a long day ahead of me, so I hope I still can convey the closeness that I feel to you when I'm out there with this pulpit in front of me. In 1978, when Harvey Milk implored gays and lesbians in San Francisco to come out, they were terrified and incredulous. The risk he was asking them to take is hard to convey from our perspective 40 years later. For those of you who may not be familiar with Harvey Milk, he was the first openly gay elected official in California and an outspoken gay rights activist for the nation. And he and then Mayor George Moscone were assassinated in 1978 by Dan White, who had recently resigned as a San Francisco supervisor. And then after he was denied his request to the mayor and the board of supervisors to be reinstated, he broke into City Hall and shot both Mayor Moscone and Harvey Milk. Now, throughout his life, Harvey knew the risk he was asking of the gay and lesbian community. But as the clip we showed earlier reveals, he was also clear about the gains to be made. Harvey himself was not out in the 1940s at his Bayshore, New York, high school. He played football and loved opera and was thought of as the extroverted class clown. One of his classmates later described him as a man's man, which he certainly was, but probably not in the way it was meant. But even after he first came out to himself and was beginning to come out to others, he was a conservative, play-by-the-rules young man, who first studied to be a teacher and then an investment banker. In 1962, in fact, he broke up with one of his first boyfriends, a man named Craig Rodwell. After Craig was arrested in New York's Jacob Riis Park for cruising and indecent exposure. Now, you need to know that indecent exposure in those days was wearing a too short bathing suit, as the requirements then were that bathing suits had to be from above the navel to below the thigh. But Harvey told his boyfriend that he didn't want to be someone who was known for agitating the police. In his later years, Harvey Milk joked about his metamorphosis from a middle-class Jewish boy to a famous rabble-rousing homosexual. And it was his courage to be that rabble-rouser that helped to change the narrative of this country so that a new story about the GLBTQ community could unfold. So how did that transformation occur? What inspired Harvey Milk along the way? Where did his courage to change the narrative come from? He may well have inherited some of it from his mother. Both his parents were veterans of the Navy, as was Harvey. His mother, Minerva, was what was called the Navy Yeomanette. And she was a tireless activist for the full rights of women in the Navy. So the stories around his table were around social justice. But I also believe he was inspired by getting proximate to the gay community, and in particular, to hearing the stories of pain from those whose sexuality was costing them everything. In his early career, Harvey worked in theater in New York. As he engaged with the theater crowd, his views opened up, and he started to come out himself. And it was his gig as associate producer of Hair that led Harvey to San Francisco for the first time. And although he tried returning to live in New York one more time, San Francisco called him back and became his home. He began to get more radical and was soon fired from an investment firm job for refusing to cut his hair and for burning his Bank of America card in public. After a local camera shop ruined a roll of his film, Harvey opened the legendary Castro Street Camera in what was now becoming known as the Gay District in San Francisco. It was there that Harvey heard the stories, the painful stories. Men who were kicked out of their homes and found San Francisco to be a safe haven for them. Men who were discharged from the military for their sexual orientation and were too ashamed to go to what they had once called home. Men, some of them his former boyfriends, who had attempted suicide. And you can hear the impact of those stories in his political speeches, like this one. I represent the gay street people, the 14-year-old runaway from San Antonio. We have to make up for hundreds of years of oppression. We have to give hope to that poor runaway kid from San Antonio. Now, in the early 1970s, a wave of anti-gay politics was sweeping the nation. From Anita Bryant, who successfully overturned a Dade County, Florida ordinance of non-discrimination against gays and lesbians, to California's John Briggs, who tried to pass a statewide law that prohibited gays and lesbians from being teachers. That's the Prop 6 in the video clip. Harvey showed up to these meetings armed with statistics. It's a pretty common knowledge that most sexual predators are heterosexual and not gay. And he did everything he could to make that knowledge known, even in the 1970s. Harvey Milk was known to kick his TV when he was angry and was famed for saying, "I finally reached a point where I knew I had to get involved or shut up." He was already dubbed at that point the mayor of Castro Street for his big personality and his connections. And he formed an unlikely alliance of gay people and Teamsters against the notorious union busters Coors Beer. Anybody remember the Coors Beer boycott? Well, the Teamsters, with Harvey Milk's help, the Teamsters promised to hire more gay drivers if the gay community supported the boycott, of course. And so there are famous moments in Castro Street of patrons coming out of bars and pouring their Coors beers out onto the streets. And it went all through the nation. And Milk was also instrumental in the Florida orange juice boycott at the time, if you remember that as well. He used those anti-gay initiatives to build the power of the gay community. He was a natural politician and ran for office more than once before he won a seat at the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And he saw that his very life, his very public life, was part of changing the narrative of this nation. In his famous hope speech, he said, "Somewhere in Des Moines or San Antonio, there is a young gay person who all of a sudden realizes that he or she is gay. Knows that if their parents find out, they will be tossed out of the house. Their classmates will taunt the child. And the Anita Bryant and John Briggs are doing their part on TV. And that child has several options: stay in the closet and suicide. And then one day, that child might open a paper that says, 'Homosexual elected in San Francisco.' And then there are two new options. One is to go to California. The other, to stay in San Antonio and fight." Spend any time with teens today, and you know that a new story about the GLBT community is being told. Most high schools have gay, straight alliance groups. Kids don't differentiate between queer and straight relationships amongst their friends. And teens shift pronouns as they explore gender in the most fluid of ways. I have a neighbor who wears a blue bracelet or a pink bracelet, depending upon how she feels in a particular day. And you're supposed to figure out her pronoun from that. There is a lot of work still to do, for sure, as the suicide rate amongst gay teens are still amongst the highest of any category of people. Let's not forget that. The narrative has changed, and it will continue to change, and there's still work to do. But in 1978, no one would have believed that the Supreme Court would approve the rights of gays and lesbians to be legally married only 40 years later. No one would have believed that we'd be talking about transgender rights only 40 years later. So much has changed in these brief 40 years. Harvey Milk and his generation of queer activists have showed us that we can change the narrative of this nation. He focused on his community coming out, but we now know what a burden that is on those who are most vulnerable to ask them to do the hardest work. The narrative has changed because of allies as well. Straight people who formed PFLAG groups, straight people who brought their gay friends home to dinner, straight people who marched in gay pride parades. What can we learn today from Harvey Milk and the way the narrative around the GLBTQ community has changed? What else needs that transformative energy? We began this service acknowledging the 59 lives lost in Las Vegas this past week, including the suicide of the shooter himself. We may never know what motivated Stephen Paddock. But I have to tell you, I'm tired of this story. The New York Times reports that in 477 days, there were 591 mass shootings in this country. They define mass shootings as four or more people shot at one time. And in those 477 days, there was zero action from Congress. 521 lives lost. 521 shootings. Not all the lives were lost. Is it time to change the narrative of an acceptance of gun violence? Whether it be a targeted hate crime like the Pulse nightclub, which was day one of the New York Times count, or an apparently random act like the Las Vegas shootings. Those same kids who are living with the legacy of the changed narrative of our queer community are experiencing a story of inaction around violence, where the worst violent acts keep getting worse, and they see the adults around them paralyzed. They need to see adult activists, just like Harvey watched his mother, a Navy feminist, before her time. Can we muster up the courage to tell our stories about gun violence personally, one-to-one, and collectively but in person without the intermediary of a computer screen? Can we challenge the narrative that guns don't kill people, people do? That the right to bear arms includes the right to stockpile assault weapons or buy 30 arms in a 3-week period? Can we challenge that? Is this the story we want? In 1978, no one would have believed that the Supreme Court would approve the rights of gays and lesbians to be married, and that we'd be talking about transgender rights. What is the story about violence we want told 40 years from now?